Islam. Do you agree?
I don't agree with that. I don't agree with the word pageant. It is clear that the Million Man March and the marches that...
You literally just think that we should just, like, noodle about and, like, somehow, like, come up with an illegal ID?
Yeah, I think that's kind of our thing.
It doesn't even... Look, it's not even recording. Okay, wait. Okay, there we go.
Is it recording?
I think it is. Okay, look,
Those green lines don't look right.
No, they're fine. It's fine. We're just supposed to say you're listening to WRUW-FM 91.1 Cleveland, broadcasting from the campus of Case Western Reserve University, and I'll throw in, like a word in there, and it... Does that sound good?
I think that sounds good to me.
Okay, good, fine. That's what we'll do.
It's time for the moment you've been waiting for. Duh.
The views and opinions expressed on this show are only those of the producers and guests, and are not necessarily those of Case Western Reserve University, WRUW-FM, and its staff or management.
Roller coasters, holy roller. I got shot down in Southern California. All along you never loved me, yeah, until the day that you shot me off. And now that it's over, I hope that you find what you
this week on Max and Teddy in the Morning at Night. Sometimes it is a maxless show, but never fear, because Andrew and Nick from the Commonwealth are here to talk about their upcoming show with Welshly Arms at the Beachland, their music, and more. Stay tuned.
Nothing I can do about it.
Good morning, good evening, good afternoon, and good night sometimes. You were listening to Max and Teddy in the Morning at Night Sometimes here on WRUW-FM 91.1 Cleveland, broadcasting from the campus of Case Western Reserve University. Hi, my name is Teddy. It is a maxless show today. Max is traveling back from a family get-together in Connecticut, and... can't be here because he's in Connecticut. So we're sorry that he's not here, but Andrew and Nick from the Commonwealth are here, and we're going to be talking to them about a whole bunch of stuff. So, hey, guys, thanks for being here.
Hey, thanks for having us on.
So I guess why don't you introduce yourselves independently and say what you do in the band, and we'll take it from there.
I'm Andrew Kuhar. I'm the lead vocals in the band and also do rhythm guitar, sometimes piano.
And I'm his older brother, Nicholas. I play drums and percussion, do some backup vocals. And we co-founded the band with our guitarist, Patrick Burke, back in 2010.
All right, fantastic. And you guys, I mean, you've been a fixture on the scene for probably, what, 3 or 4 years now? I'm trying to think.
2011. Yeah, that was when we put Souvenir out, and that's when we started playing live, so...
So I guess, you know, for listeners that haven't necessarily heard the Commonwealth before, and we're gonna get to playing some of your music, you know, as the show progresses, since you'll be here for the full hour. But, you know, how has the Commonwealth kind of become the band they are today? Because I see you around. I've seen you at Bright Winter a couple of years. I think the last time I saw you was at the Happy Dog at the Euclid Tavern.
Okay.
You've played at the series that the Rock Hall did a couple of years ago. So, yeah.
I mean, what it really was is Patrick and I met in high school, and we were in jazz band and concert band and marching band together, all that. And that was sort of where we met each other and realized we had similar musical sensibilities. And I was like, hey, I have this family, because I have Andrew and then our oldest brother, Mark, he plays bass. So it was just kind of like a thing, bring a lot of different friends and family around. Everyone was into instruments. Everyone was musical. And over the years, it was kind of Andrew and Pat and I were the ones that really stuck at it and loved composing music, so we just kept going with it. And over the past 2 years, we've acquired and kind of come across, we had the good luck to come across our bass player, Brian, and then our newest addition, Jacob, who plays trumpet and he does auxiliary percussion. And it, we really meant from the outset to have it be not necessarily a five piece. It could have been a four or five or six or whatever piece. Mm-hmm. But we knew that we wanted to have enough people to make kind of have this brutal orchestra sound where, you know, we can have trumpet, we can have brass, we can have Pat playing bowed guitar. We can have, you know, there's two different people that can play piano and have that kind of flexibility. So mm-hmm. that's been the idea from the outset, and it's just taken us sort of this long to get there.
Yeah, Nick has a lot of different backgrounds and drum styles and whatnot, playing in, even all the way back to playing in marching bands, like he said, the jazz band. And whenever we, and similar to with Pat, you know, Pat knows how to play trumpet, so he's arranged all of our trumpet parts for the records. Mm-hmm. And when we got to a point as the three of us where we were started recording our own records, we just got to this place where we wanted to layer stuff on top of the foundational guitar drums arrangement that we have as a rock outfit.
Right, on top and, of the classic sound.
Yeah, mm-hmm. yeah. So we added a lot of unusual instrumentation to that stuff because that's what we heard in our heads. And we had mm-hmm. guys who knew, hey, I've been in situations where I know how to play right parts for those instruments.
Uh-huh.
We know how to fit those in the arrangement. And yeah, over time, Nick would write auxiliary parts. Pat would write extra textural parts with the trumpet and the bowed guitar and whatnot, like Nick said. And we just eventually had to figure out, okay, well, this is clearly more than three people's worth of arms can do.
Right.
So yeah, we need yeah. to get more people in the
you
band.
You can't play and, trumpet and guitar at the same time?
No, we're not working on one of those like monkey toys that
yeah,
play all
like,
instruments.
It's like Bert from Mary Poppins, one man
right.
band. That was yeah. the alternative, and it just wasn't yeah. testing well with our test audiences. Yeah. So,
but, yeah, so we played for a while. We kind of struggled without having more than just the three of us, and we did mm-hmm. as best we could, but there just came this point where we knew we had to start reaching out and really seriously finding other people. And Pat found both Brian and Jake, actually, just in the last couple of years. And ever since we finally got up to speed, we feel like we can bring anything from our catalog to the live show now. And that's what we're doing now. And then we start writing new stuff with mm-hmm. that in mind so we can bring that to the forte, too. We go back and look at old songs and say, what else could they have done that we didn't get to do? So it's a lot. It's definitely been a slow evolution, but we're kind of at the point where we feel we always wanted to be when we started, especially uh-huh. live. So all those ideas that we have, we can finally bring and just show the full palette, I guess, so to speak.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. And you know, the addition of the trumpet and the bowed guitar really take you guys from just being a garage rock band to being almost more of a chamber pop,
mm-hmm.
yeah,
orchestral yeah. sounding band.
Yeah,
so.
And that it was interesting too because for the three of us, when we were in our house that we lived in for 6 years composing, we always saw Pat in maybe in some ways as like a composer and arranger before being like a rock guitarist. But the reality was we the writing was literally on the wall because we'd see reviews and people would be like, oh, they're kind of like the Black Keys. It was like, oh man. I was
which
like,
I feel like is the default comparison.
Well, yeah, and I think what it was
people from Cleveland.
Yeah.
We just ended up playing the louder stuff where it was like, hey, if we play loud, maybe people will notice there's no bass player. Like, so
yeah.
there was just a lot of utility, and it was like, we have to be practical about what we can and can't play. And at some point it was kind of like, yeah, you know what? I was like, we want to make sure that going forward, if we're going to keep investing the time in this, that the way that we see ourselves, we want other people to see our and hear ourselves in that way more. So it was like, it was really important that we found those people to help achieve that.
And I feel like, you know, that Black Keys comparison gets thrown on a lot yeah. of people, but, you know, no more so than maybe Welshley Arms, who you're going to be playing with mm-hmm. this Friday mm-hmm. at the Beachland Ballroom. I think that's the second night of a two-night residency
yes.
that they've set up.
Yeah.
And you guys are going to be a part of the second night with Corduroy Season, who
right.
I haven't heard. But
they're relatively new from what I've heard. Okay. I only just heard a couple stuff.
Cool.
Dark Horse.
Some videos online, yeah.
they're the new guys in town. Been here and get there.
Well, that's awesome. So what, you know, are you excited? What makes being a part of that kind of two-night residency that Welshley's having at the Beachland exciting for you guys?
I think the fact that, you know, I think sometimes music gets, and not in a, I don't want to say this with a negative connotation, but in some ways it does get, it's another thing in addition to, like, it's the Cleveland Flea, and there's a band playing, and music is part of, like, the overall experience, but it's just, like, one of 8 or 9 or 10 different things going on. So more and more it's become important to have something like, you know, a Cellar Door Rendezvous where it was like, At least in its initial inception, it was just very much about like, come see these bands. This is it. This is what's going on. Focus your attention on these couple of players mm-hmm. for a night or two. And I think that's why we're extra excited about this Welshley show. Because, you know, someone might go out to the Beachland one night, not even look at who's playing. It's like, I just want to go hang out at the Beachland.
Uh-huh.
And they've really made a concerted effort to design this as a night where, hey, everyone's coming out to see these five bands.
Yeah, I talked to Sam a while ago. We've been trying to play a show with Welshley for a long time. Every time we run into each other, and most of the time it's at the Beachland when we're playing shows in the separate rooms or whatnot, we've wanted to put a show on together for years, and the schedule finally worked out. But when I last talked to him, he mentioned how they wanted to get back to maybe putting on more of these specific shows that were meant for just a couple local bands. It was uh-huh. like, come see these bands for this specific reason on this night, and it wasn't a part of a big festival, because I think they, from what it sounded like, they wanted to tap into what their audience really was, instead of, well, there's just this shotgun approach of, we'll get who we get at the festivals.
Mm, right.
And the music has its own place, like Nick said. There's events where there's a lot of things going on, and there's a music portion. Mm-hmm. This is just music, and it's just local music, and the bands are hand-selected to work with each other. So there's not too much music either night, but you get like a good concentrated dose of it. So just that focus and being a part of something like that. We've done a lot of festivals in town, especially last year. We did almost all of them, and it was really fun, but it is nice to go back and do something that's just a few showcase bands mm-hmm. for a night. So just a change of pace too, but working with them, it sounds like they've gotten really good at figuring out how this thing works. So being able to learn from that and just latch onto it is great.
Absolutely. And it sounds, you know, as we're talking, like they're really trying to put the music experience back in a concert. You know,
yes.
the focus is very much back on, you know, here is, you know, it's an event. You know, it's not just something that you casually show up at. And, you know, there aren't a lot of bands on the Cleveland scene that are really able to pull off stuff,
sure.
that, you know, necessarily that magnitude. Mm-hmm. Welshley is certainly one of those bands. You know, mm-hmm. Seafair is another one of those bands that can do stuff like that.
Mm-hmm.
But that's really, really cool to hear.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And, you know, speaking about Cellar Door and Cellar Door Rendezvous, a lot of people, when they think of the Commonwealth, they associate you, you know, almost 100% with Cellar Door.
Mm-hmm.
That's how, you know, I learned how you guys were.
Mm-hmm.
And Cellar Door is, you know, more or less the big music promoter around. But recently, you know, a couple of months ago.
It was maybe just a month ago.
Yeah. It wasn't that long ago. They've actually announced that they're really going to kind of restructure what they do and just bring it back to the online publication
mm-hmm.
and maybe, you know, the festival organizing. So, you know, as they're ramping down the record label portion mm-hmm. of their business, how does that affect what you guys do as a band? I'm curious.
Well,
there are a lot of bands that are in this boat that have been working with them for years and years.
Yeah, the last album we put out, Urban Soul, was already being made when we started working with them, and we did a rendezvous with them the first year they did it. It went really well, and it was just a real natural fit. And at the same time, we were just stressed out wanting to, I don't know, manage the shows, and
uh-huh.
we were getting inundated with emails for booking stuff and just keeping all that, making sure everyone in the band is aware of when things are coming up. Playing the role of the manager is
the shared Google calendar
is not super fun. So having someone to say, let's take that weight off your back for a while was really nice, on top of having, hey, someone who can, you know, help us put the album out in terms of just like distribution and promotion and whatnot, finding mm-hmm. it to go in channels that we wouldn't have thought to otherwise put it in. So now we're kind of, we feel like, you know, we're kind of back to where we talked about where we started. We feel like we're back to that a little bit already. You know, we already started getting things like emails and working even on the show with the Welshley guys to have more direct contact and make sure we know we can help where we can help.
Mm-hmm.
Just getting back to, it's been a while since we've had to do that, like actually read an email and figure out what details are important and which ones you share with the band members, which ones you like have to wait on, all that sort of stuff, the micromanagement. The most immediate practical thing is just taking that back on.
Yeah.
And it's something that we actually found, especially with working with the two guys and performing out a lot more and not worried so much about going straight back to the studio,
uh-huh.
as we felt it feels good to focus on the performance, to focus as performers, as musicians, to think mostly about that when you come to a show. there's always things like load in and carrying your gear around and all the little things, the peripheral things that go on as being a part of a rock band in town in Cleveland. So just being reminded of that, it's one of those things that we know we definitely want to continue to seek help with, because we know we can tell the difference right away, that contrast of having it for 2 years and then not.
And then not having it, right.
So yeah, we're having to get used to that learning curve. It's growing pain.
But
again,
it just goes back to, you know, might as well use this as a, hey, if anyone's out there listening and you're way into local music, I mean, honestly, I think part of it was just, it was really, you know, there was all of a sudden, all these artists and all these creative people saw that, like, hey, Cellar Door is like putting these things on, and then that sort of thing gets oversaturated, and it's like, well, there's really only so many personnel there and so many hours they have to devote outside of like their family time and work time. And
right,
whatnot.
Absolutely. It's not a full-time job.
Yeah, and I think, you know,
but it really is.
Yeah, and it really becomes a second job, and so, which is why we didn't want to do it. Like, so, you know, to be quite honest, like, we wanted to write and perform and record and all that. And I think what it goes back to is I do think I've had a growing sense over the past couple of years that people are getting more and more attached to and aware of the music scene. And, you know, hey, if you're a guy that loves going to the Happy Dog and just seeing whatever, and you're a lover of music, and you're someone who like loves supporting and nurturing that sort of thing, but you're not necessarily a musician, there's definitely a need for that in the city. I think in general that kind of clarion call needs to go out, that you know, even shows like this, I feel like you don't even get an opportunity to come on a WRUW show until you've been around for 3 or 4 years, you know.
Right.
There's a lot of bands that don't even make it to this point. They're just like, they live and die in a garage, or like they have one or two shows at the Beachland and never make it past that, because there's so many other cogs that need to turn and people that need to help out. Takes a village to raise a band, sort of thing.
Right. Or, you know, just knowing the right people sometimes.
Sure, sure, mm-hmm. Yeah.
Absolutely. So,
yeah. And that way it's had practical effects for us right now. But as far as we know, you know, we still have a show to play, and we're
right.
still writing and working. We just finally started getting back into the studio. It just felt like the right time for it. And for us, in terms of being musicians and the stuff we want to do creatively and express, it feels like, yeah, like this feels just like what we would, like business as
what
usual.
What you'd be doing anyway.
Yeah.
Right.
So, but definitely we're going to have to get used to some changes for a little while and then get back, and just a balance.
Yeah, and I mean, it certainly doesn't sound like it's affecting the scale of the shows that you're playing at all.
No.
No, we actually had the other main show we had this year in the summer was at the Rock Hall, mm-hmm. Opening up for El King. That was a really fun show.
Mm-hmm.
And we hadn't played there since the one that you mentioned earlier.
Yeah, the Summer in the City
Way
thing that
like
they put on last year.
Yeah, and we got really lucky to get on that, because that was right after we started, and that was really fun. It was really hot, actually. It was fun for a while until we almost got sun poisoning or whatever that was. It was really rough, like outside July, 95-degree weather. But we did it again indoors this time, and there were really good people to work with there. It was really one of those. It was just a really fun show. It went really well.
Yeah.
Awesome. So you mentioned Urban Soul, which is the album that you put out 2 years ago. It's about time for us to take a break. We're about 20 minutes into the show.
Sure.
So I think, why don't we play the title track? We'll come back, talk about it, and talk about the album. So you've been listening to Max and Teddy in the Morning at Night Sometimes here on WRUW-FM 91.1 Cleveland. I'm speaking with Nick and Andrew of The Commonwealth, who are going to be playing with Welshly Arms at the Beachland Ballroom and Tavern this Friday, which is the 16th, I believe. Doors for that show open at 7.
Mm-hmm.
Music starts at 8, and we're going to be playing the title track off of this is your sophomore album, Urban Soul.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. I'm not counting EPs.
Yes, I guess second full length.
Second full length. So, Urban Soul, here we go. All right, that was The Commonwealth with Urban Soul. You are listening to Max and Teddy in the Morning at Night Sometimes here on WRUW. I'm Teddy, and I'm joined by both Andrew and Nick from The Commonwealth, and that's the title track from your 2013 album. It's probably one of my favorite cuts on the album. It's definitely the most garagey, you mm-hmm. know, most in-your-face, I think. Doesn't feature any of that trumpet that we were talking about.
Yeah.
No.
But I'm curious as to why you titled the record Urban Soul in the first place, and maybe why, you know, that song ended up being the title track.
Yeah, you know, Pat has like a knack for kind of like Ringo. He's got this knack for these little, not malapropisms, but he'll coin these little phrases. Like, he's really good at coining. Like, he should work it as like Don Draper-ish character and like make ad taglines, because it could be a whole nother like revenue stream. We were for our first album, we were like, man, what does this sound like? It sounds like this and this and this, but how do we boil that down for someone who's a stranger to our music? And Pat's like, it's loud pop music. And we're like, oh, loud pop.
Right.
And for this, he was just like, I want something that sounds like, it's like soul, but it's like more modern. Like, it's from the city. It's like urban soul. And it was like, literally, we're like, I think we should call the album that. And he was like, what? Call it what? And we're like, urban soul. Like, you just came out. He's like, I did. Like, he was one of those moments.
Yeah, we had a lot of talks.
He's got a gift for that.
I remember when we were at our old place that was more or less our home studio. It sounds really, I don't know, cliche or something, but we would literally just sit out on the porch, and it'd be those low, like, humid summer nights.
Mm-hmm.
And we would be talking a lot about music, really, like, get really deep into like the stuff we wanted to work on, what we wanted the next record to sound like. And there's stuff we didn't, you know, we started thinking about right when we were done with Emerald City Blues. And it was a lot of times we literally said, like, we want it to sound like this, like exactly the moment we're in right now, just the aesthetics of that moment. How do you do that orally? And eventually, yeah, that topic or comment came up, and the title track, this song, was the first one I think we wrote in this session of writing. And we write pretty fast. Whenever we write, we go to it and we put our heads to the ground. And this was one of the first ones we did. And a big reason that it worked for us was because for a while it actually worked as a three piece.
Yeah.
You know, there's no trumpet, but Pat's doing a lot of slide guitar. He doesn't break that out too often.
Right.
There's a couple tracks he does it on. That one's definitely the most. The kind of production we figured out how to do at home to get that sound was pretty intense, but it's a huge character in the song, and it adds to that garage, that like woozy slinkiness that has going on in
exactly.
it. I've heard people say it reminds them of like dust on windowsills and the lights coming through.
Yeah, absolutely.
That kind of image that comes in your head. And I think that's an image that we relate a lot to on the album. But at the same time, those are times and places and events that you associate with experiences in your life. So that's when we get to specifics and whatever in the lyrics, that's where we marry the two. This is like the place where I had this feeling, or the time when this thing happened.
So that
was just the first song that came together, because the three of us felt we were struggling without a bassist, and mm-hmm. you know, the whole, what we were just talking about, kind of all came out all at once. And it was just a song that we could perform as a three piece. It felt powerful still. We played it at the first Rendezvous. I remember we had a lot of fun with that song, even as a three piece. And it's great now, 'cause there's a little piano, and of course the bass has a huge role in it, so we can do all that now. But it just kind of was we call them linchpins sometimes, but it was really a good, like, I don't know, good blueprint for what the rest of it, how the rest of it came out. It just was one of those ones. And yeah, you wouldn't imagine a song like The Bright Ones was directly inspired by that.
Right.
There's all these different idiosyncratic sounds on the record. But that song was just a real good launching point for the rest of it. And it just felt true to what we're trying to do.
It was just loud. And so we're like, let's put the loud one first.
Yeah.
it's actually, it gets pretty simple. We're like, because you try to understand the audience, it's like,
you got to grab people's attention.
When someone puts this on Bandcamp, you have about 20 seconds before they decide to like get rid of their tab or keep listening. We're like, this one's loud, let's put it first.
Yeah.
It like just kind of punches, it grabs you by the throat. So we're like, let's do that.
No, it's definitely an attention grabber. And it almost to me sounds industrial, not in like the Kraftwerk or Nine Inch Nails way, but it definitely has that metallic, you know, almost grittiness that you would think about in urban, you know, if you were going to describe the term urban soul to someone. And I was actually, you know, on first listen, I thought, you know, urban soul was almost a colloquialism you could use for Cleveland.
Mm-hmm.
Almost, it has that same type of grittiness that a lot of people are, you know, in the past 5 years or so have really started to embrace in this city and really kind of adapt. So do you think, maybe I'm reading too much into it, but you know, if it's not a reference for Cleveland, you know, would you describe the city of Cleveland as having an influence on the sound you have on this record?
Yeah, absolutely. And I think like from a 30,000 foot view, like I have friends who are architects and they talk about, you know, parts of the city that, you know, there's so much that needs to get bulldozed, and it's, you know, however, 10 grand to bulldoze a lot. And it's like,
yeah.
People, you know, you'll go down to the Cleveland Fleet, or you'll go down to West 4th.
Yeah.
Or you'll go down to West 25th, and it looks like the city's really vibrant. But then you branch out into all these other areas, and especially in East Cleveland. And, you know, it's pretty close to where we were living in Nottingham, and it's just like, what is happening to this city? There's these, like, weird pockets of revitalization, and then there's also these pockets where it's just like everything is struggling, and it seems like it's, like, gasping for its last breath. And I think, you know, while that's happening on a big level and we're like, man, what is going to happen? Where's the city going to be in 5 to 10 years? Like, who knows? We're also at a point where, you know, we've lived in this city for the most part for our whole lives. You can get to a point where in your mid-20s or you're closing in on 30 and most of your really great friends have moved away. And so it's this weird kind of out-of-body experience of, I didn't go anywhere, but this place isn't the same sort of feeling. And it was us taking stock of, like, you know, we said in an interview like a couple years ago, like, I think the soul of the city is the good people in the city. And when those people, at least the ones you're close to, are gone, where's the soul in the city? Like, where are the friendships, where are, like, the relationships that mean stuff to you? And having to be like, oh man, I'm 27 and gotta, like, find new people, new things. Like,
right.
It can be like an alienating experience, but it can also be like a kind of renaissance revitalization. So there's certainly all that going on in the album.
Yeah,
yeah,
for sure. There was something that Nick mentioned a long time ago. I can't remember what venue it was, but it was Cleveland specifically works just fine, but I think there's that feeling when you're in any metropolitan city of, even if you're there for a while, but a lot of these cities like Cleveland are places that are kind of like places people stop for a minute before they go to the next place. Like,
right.
How many people stop in, like, Hopkins Airport, for instance, or just as like a travel, like a jumping off point almost. And for us, a lot of people have grown up here and stayed here for a while. Like, people are really loyal in Cleveland to Cleveland. And so it's sometimes weird to experience people moving away or coming and going as different events come on. You see people for family events or whatnot. And there's just that moment of, you haven't seen someone in years, and then you see them again and they've changed a little bit and you've changed a little bit, and you feel that there is that nostalgia or that sentiment, that vibrance of like, oh, remember when? And at the same time, like I said, things have changed. So there's that reality and that those adult conversations you have, or that maturity that you've grown to have. And I think over time you just affix those feelings and experiences with the city you're in. And that's why I think on the cover there's that, it's taken at the beneath Tower City at the RTA,
right.
Which it was a lot of trouble to get that photo actually. But it's the idea, you don't know if the people are happy that they're leaving or coming and going together.
Right.
Are they happy to be reunited? Are they happy to be parting? Are they sad to be reuniting? You don't know. It's just
right.
It's just that
it's an emotionally ambiguous photo.
Yeah.
Yeah. That,
but it's emotionally charged.
Yeah. Very
regardless of your
yeah.
interpretation.
Yeah.
So it's just that all that stuff, that gray area, that undefined, well, there's been a lot of space between us in a certain amount of time, distance wise or emotionally, and how do we bridge that gap? And I think the album, over the course of it, there's a lot of instances where we just talk about instances of that. And like you said, there's that steeliness to it. So we just, you know, you're in a metropolitan city with tall buildings, and there's metal and steel and the rust belt everywhere. So you just kind of soak that in and spit it back out.
No, you internalize it.
Yeah.
And Nick, I want to return to something you said a little bit earlier, you know, talking about those areas maybe in between, you know, West 6th, West 25th or downtown. You guys recorded this in Collinwood, right?
Yeah, right.
You recorded this album, you know, in the heart of East Cleveland. So that, you know, must have had some influence on the sound too, probably.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, the grittiness you spoke of is probably just a byproduct of the fact that we had experiences in studios prior to being in the Commonwealth that we were kind of like weren't totally pleased with, and so we just pulled the trigger at some point. We're like, let's buy all this stuff and figure it out. Like, we can do it. And I think Urban Soul is kind of the mark of, hey, we figured this stuff out, and in addition to that, we figured out its limitations, so let's push this stuff as hard as we can and get as much out of, like, these haphazard, not haphazard, I mean, it was very careful, but, like, these at, it was really an at-home studio setup with like these $100-$200 mics, whatever, and our little FireWire unit that we recorded.
Yeah, we did. There's no booths.
Yeah, there's no booths.
Right.
No soundproofing.
You know, I was like, hey, get you that Urban Soul, that slide part, like Pat did an AB amp thing where he had two amps hooked up. One of them was in the bathroom, so I was like, yeah, talk about gritty. So,
right.
Yeah, that's definitely there.
Yeah.
It's where all the echo is, though.
Yeah, yeah.
It's true what they say. It just sounds good in there.
Yeah.
No, it definitely does. And, Andrew, you mentioned The Bright Ones, which is another song that I wanted to play for our listeners right now that, you know, is almost the polar opposite of Urban Soul. Like you said, it's very subdued, but it features a lot of that bright trumpet playing.
Mm-hmm.
So maybe before we jump into playing it, is there a specific story behind this song, any inspiration for it, or
not a specific instance? I think it's just, it's a very, there's a lot of admission in it. The song starts off the line, "It's easy to be so dumb," and sometimes we've gotten the comments that people will come to us and say, oh, you know, you're doing this thing really well, or you have a degree in whatever, you have a full-time job in that, and there's all these really like easy marks for this is what this says you're successful in society today. And
right.
They're just like, just check them off on a bucket list. And if you have these things, then you are equal to successful. And in the meanwhile, and a lot of people will look at each other and say, oh, you're successful, or I'm struggling, or vice versa. And I think it's just a look at, well, even us who, yes, technically we have jobs, and we feel like we're pretty stable with where we're at in life, we still have a lot of things we're working through, and we still make mistakes all the time. And it's an equalizer. Yeah, it's an equalizer.
Right.
And it's just everyone's on the same level kind of thing. And
life is the great leveler. Don't
cut yourself too short too, I think is the big thing. Mm. Don't sell yourself too short that you don't have potential to do whatever you want to do really well. And we'll do the things we think we do well really badly sometimes. And that's a lot in there. It's ambiguous. I think it's vague at times, but I think we're trying to just say that as universally as we can in the song.
Right.
So that's pretty much it.
Mm-hmm. All right. So why don't we play it?
Sure.
Here is The Bright Ones. You are listening to Max and Teddy in the Morning at Night Sometimes here on WRUW. I'm talking with Andrew and Nick of the Commonwealth. Here is their song, The Bright Ones.
So dumb, what I'm looking for, the words to call you home. Yelling at the top of my lungs, it's not as fun without you there. I don't pretend.
Where do you listen to WRUW? Maybe it's on your morning jog. Maybe we're that extra little bit of motivation that helps you break through the wall to finally lose those 5 pounds. Or maybe you're running from your own personal demons. And I don't mean psychological demons. I'm actually referring to real demons. Succubi from one of the 9 circles of hell, intent on catching you. Perhaps there's some sort of 3-headed dog that's trying to play a game of fetch with your ankles. I don't know. But what I do know is, WRUW, FM 91.1 Cleveland, we're there for you.
Just because you can't see lead paint doesn't mean it's not on your walls, doors, windows, and sills. Today, lead paint poisoning affects over 1 million children, with effects ranging from nausea to speech delay and learning deficits, and in rare cases, seizures and death. What's more, just 3 granules of lead dust from old paint can poison your child. If your home was built before 1978, your family could be at risk. Luckily, there are simple steps you can take to safeguard against this harmful neurotoxin. Log on to leadfreekids.org or call 800-424-LEAD for more information.
Hey, champ, what has 2 thumbs and doesn't give a crap? Bob Kelso, how you doing?
The views and opinions expressed on this show are only those of the producers and guests and are not necessarily those of Case Western Reserve University, WRUW-FM, or its staff or management.
Listening to Max and Teddy in the morning at night sometimes here on WRUW-FM 91.1 Cleveland, the voice of Case Western Reserve University. Hi, my name is Teddy. It's a Maxless show today, but never fear. In the background, you're hearing the song Loud Pop by the Commonwealth from their 2012 album Emerald City Blues, and I'm lucky enough to be joined by both Andrew and Nick of the Commonwealth in studio.
Thanks.
Hello. Thanks for having us.
Anytime. Trying to think. You guys are here not only because I'm fans of the music, but because you are playing a show with Welshly Arms
mm-hmm.
this Friday at the Beachland Ballroom. Mm-hmm. Doors open at 7. Music starts at 8. And it's part of a 2-night residency.
Mm-hmm.
Welshly is just set up at the Beachland.
Yeah.
And we talked about this, you know, earlier, just making the music the focus, making it an event.
Yeah, and that's what just makes it really special and cool. There's just a plethora of really interesting bands in the city, and I think one of the things is you're always fighting for people's attention with, maybe I want to go to bowling at Mayhalls or go to Cleveland Flea or go see some movie at the Cleveland Cinemas or go to the SIF.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's just great to have a band that's taken it upon themselves to design this event that's all about music and getting people to focus their attention on just one thing for one night, or two nights in this case.
Absolutely. And we were talking during the break that you guys are actually doing a, you know, a special promotion along with, you know, people that, you know, come to the show under the auspices of the Commonwealth. They get something?
Yeah. If you decide you want to see us, if you go through us directly or reach out and say you're interested, we're giving away copies of Urban Soul to anyone that wants to come see the Commonwealth. So we, it's the full length record. We have CDs pressed, and pretty much all you have to do is let us know.
That's awesome. So if you enjoyed the couple of songs that we played earlier, the title track, Urban Soul, and The Bright Ones, definitely may be something to consider. And we, you know, we've talked a lot about the album, and but it's been, you know, 2 years since Urban Soul came out. So I'm wondering where you guys are in terms of recording new material. Is there a follow-up, you know, a third full-length LP planned? What's happening?
Yes.
So yeah. A tentative yes.
Yeah. No, definitely. We're in the middle of doing sessions right now, pretty much, and writing, just that whole process. We just got done with some sessions at Summa out in Painesville.
With Uncle Paul.
Yeah. Paul Hammond, our engineer out there. It's a really good space. We were recommended to go there by many bands that we're friends with, and it exceeded our expectations. So we're having really fun, and the material is conducive to the space we feel. It's it's gonna be, we're aiming to do a full follow-up, full length record, and we're about halfway through it, at least in terms of like recording, you know, whatever stage it is. It's hard to say. It's kind of it's just in the middle of it. We're in the thick of it and just taking that serious first step. I think once we hit the record button, we all feel like we're actually doing it. But we've been writing since Urban Soul. We have so many songs that are on demos or CDs or iPods or whatever, just demos racked up. And we just, as we started playing, especially with the five piece, there was just a natural, hey, like these songs need these parts, and these players could play these parts very well, so let's just start playing them out and see how they go. And they, a lot of the new songs actually fit really well into our sets live, because they just are, they're really comfortable to play, they're fresh, they're fun. We get to explore the full arrangements right off the bat. And also when we play them live, we learn about what the songs want to be, and we can bring that back into the studio. So that whole process gets us excited to go back in the studio, and we're trying to capture whatever that is right now. So there's a lot more, there's more of a performative, spontaneous live element to the album. They're new songs, they're definitely going to be like, they're high fidelity being recorded. It's not a live album by any means, but it's got more of that live energy for sure.
Yeah.
And you answered one of the questions I was going to have about the recording process, because I'm curious, because you guys did start off as the three piece, and then you added Brian and Jacob to the live lineup. Yes. So I was wondering if it was still the core, you know, three of you, you two along with Patrick, writing the songs, and then just, you know, bringing them to the group. So you now write the songs with the five of you in mind?
I think, you know, what really ends up happening is I'd say 95% of the time it's the three of us, and, you know, there might be a bass part that Pat or Andy makes. Pat still does all the trumpet arrangements. And then, you know, here and there, as the songs kind of grow and are performed live, Brian and Jake, they'll put some of their fingerprints on them too, but the three of us are principally composing everything. But what we have been able to do now is, like, you know, now we can track with four or five people all at once, and that's awesome. Sometimes we take it back to the three piece. Sometimes we got all five blaring, but we just kind of use it as we need to.
No, it's cool to hear that, because there are definitely acts in Cleveland, you know, that are one man bands.
Sure.
You know,
yeah.
That just record everything themselves and then, you know, bring it to a live group. So you're really interesting in between. You know, it's a very collaborative writing process, it sounds.
Yeah, we always have seen, especially the three of us, as always an ensemble piece, and it's always a very democratic process. And it's always just, if there's a good enough idea to start to germinate and turn into a song, whoever can contribute and bring that vision to what it needs to be, or if, hey, someone has an idea and I didn't expect this change to happen in the song, but this person knows how to handle that, we'll let that person sort of direct where it should go. And it just ends up being, everyone's very just supportive of each other's ideas, whichever idea excites the group as a whole the most. And then, yeah, usually those songs make it to the five piece, and then they've been going really well live. We found a lot of the new stuff, they're really exciting to play. the crowd seems very engaged with them. So we just continue to put them in. So we're pretty happy with how things have been going so far in that regard.
And I think too, like at this point, I mean, I'm sure a lot of other bands in Cleveland are like this too, but like we were kind of like, hey, once you get people's attention, you don't want to lose it. So we love composing, and we also didn't want to lose the kind of attention and audience that we were starting to gain. So we were just like, all right, every year, 2011, 2012, 2013, put something out.
Mm-hmm.
And then we were finally like, all right, you know, we don't ever have more than the 40-minute set list. So it's like, let's like, we can finally slow down and relax and enjoy the recording process, save up some more money, go record in the woods with Paul at Suma and just take our time. And that's like been a luxury and like an awesome experience. I mean, you know, you have stuff like Ohio Sky just recorded Big Distraction there.
Mm-hmm.
So Long Albatross recorded some tracks there, and Black Keys did Attack and Release there. So
right.
There's also something totally else that starts clicking in your mind when you walk into a place like the Black Keys, like they wrote like I Got Mine Here. Like that's crazy.
Right.
And Wild Cherry did like Play That Funky Music White Boy there. Like, a place has a lot of history.
Yeah, it does.
It's really cool to be able to go in a place. It makes everyone bring even more of their A game, because it's like, hey, this is no joke. Again, it never was a joke, but this is like, I think everyone feels like they get that extra boost when you're in a space like that.
Yeah, we never prepared as much as we did going in there. We always had stuff. We knew whenever, even at our home studio, because it's a lot of work to just set it up ourselves. We're always tearing things down and bringing it back up. So we always wanted to make the most of our time, and we always knew this is the song we want to do. We know the tempo. Like, everything was really mapped out. But even for this, because we're taking everything somewhere else,
right,
and it's working with another person we hadn't worked before, there's this whole other tier of preparation we had to go through. And even that, you know, we're still having to think on our feet and get creative, problem solving. But I think overall, it's just allowed us to, again, going back to just performing and being musicians and not worrying about engineering. So we really can just get totally into that space of just when we're writing and we're the three of us or the five of us now going at it, what is that, and just capturing that and just getting rid of all the fat.
You know something's going right when like a core member like Pat is like, yeah, these are my ideas for like the tuba section. And I'm like, oh yes, low brass. Like, we've freed up enough creative space for someone to be like, yeah, I think I need some baritone like saxophone on this, and be like, all right, like that could be really awesome. Because it's like, oh, just do something brand new, and you have the energy and the time, and now you really have a room and a space to do all that in, so it's like awesome.
And it's fascinating, because a lot of the albums that you, Nick, just listed as being recorded there were either, you know, big transitional albums. Attack and Release was a really pivotal album
absolutely.
For the Black Keys, or, you know, Ohio Sky and So Long Albatross. Those are huge sounding records, you know, much bigger than anything they had released prior to that.
Sure.
So is it fair to say that, you know, your next record is going to either be, you know, transitional and or just a much bigger sound?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. I mean, it was wide open. The phrase we used in the studio was wide open, because that's what the amps were at. Because
you turned them up to 11?
They were at 10.
They were at 10?
Pat's amps were, not even kidding, because we asked Paul, you know, Pat brought, of course, his own gear, and we all bring our own stuff because we all have a very specific tone we want to go for, but Paul's got some great stuff there too. So they collaborated and mixed and matched things, and whenever we were asking, you know, how loud are we allowed to get, just making sure we're not going to blow out things and whatnot, just being respectful. And Paul's just wide open.
Wide open, like, man.
Just leave it there. We just threw everything out as loud as we could get. One of the last songs we did there was really fun because it was very loose and we didn't think we were going to get to it, but it was a very like just open-ended, like we're just going to play it as we play it, no metronome, amps are way up, and it just felt like we were in the rehearsal space more or less. It was really, it's hard to, sometimes you'll have those moments in the rehearsal space and you're like, wow, I wish we had everything set up and mics were up and we had the record button going and that's what we could have put out. And it was like one of those experiences. So I feel like it's very it's unfiltered in terms of, it's going to have a much bigger sound because I think, you know, some of the constraints of a live studio in your own house is that you can't get too loud.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, if you've seen our live shows, they're much louder than the record
is.
They are
much louder than the record.
So,
yeah,
hopefully that's what we're aiming for.
That's fantastic.
Yeah, and really most of the new, I'd say like everything we recorded at Sumo we're playing this Friday.
Yes. Yeah, pretty much.
And that's like another big thing, you know, if you've seen the Commonwealth before, we've got, you know, these two relatively new members, and then also we're really premiering half the new album at this show. So
Something to look forward to, certainly.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, you know, in the true spirit of what a Max and Teddy interview normally is like, because I feel like this has been a little bit less silly than when Max is typically here, we always have a couple of miscellaneous questions that we like to ask. So,
sure.
If the Commonwealth's music was a food, which food would it be and why?
Wow. That's deep. Man.
Getting you to think outside of the box, wide open.
If it was a cocktail, it would probably be an old fashioned. But if it was a food?
It explains why I like your guys' sound so much.
A food.
Oh, my God.
Do cocktails count as food?
Yeah.
They shouldn't.
I'm in trouble, man.
Food. We all have different.
How about this? Like egg in a basket, you know, like the fried egg in the middle of a piece of bread, but it's like ostrich egg, like a huge egg. That's what it'd be.
Some kind of steak on the side.
Yeah, steak on the side.
Something colorful. Something colorful on the side. That's the breast.
Some pico de gallo in there.
Yeah, there you go.
Chutney of vegetables or something. Yeah. All right.
I don't know if people listen to the Commonwealth at breakfast, though.
They should.
But
Why not? Maybe they should try it.
Add it to your morning meal.
That's really
Doctors
the goal.
Doctors recommend listening to the Commonwealth to start off your... Okay. Along with breakfast. So, as a final question before I have you guys pick what we're going to play ourselves out with from Urban Soul. Do either of you, Nick or Andrew, remember the first album that you bought with your own money?
Yes. CD, the first CD I bought with my own money was A Perfect Circle's Meridianum. The first cassette.
Giving me the super intense look. First, like you're remembering when you opened up the shrink wrap and you smelled the CD insert.
And the first cassette I ever bought was Green Day's Dookie.
You own that on cassette. That's hardcore.
Man, I got to say, because you said cassette, my first one was a cassette. It was Bush, 16 Stone.
Was it? Oh,
it
man.
It totally was. my older brother was into it, and it was on the radio. I remember, I was like, I'll get it.
And
I do remember that now.
Tragic Kingdom just turned 20, like Gavin Rosdale.
Oh, my goodness gracious. Yeah, don't remind me of that.
Oh, yeah. It takes you back.
That makes me feel old, and I'm not even... And I'm not even that old.
So those would be the first ones.
It's interesting because I don't necessarily hear any of those groups in the Commonwealth's music.
Yeah.
A lot of music was played to us as kids, though, because our dad was so into classic rock. We had all kinds of records. You know, literally still had turntables. Mm-hmm. And we were listening to all sorts of stuff then, especially Beatles and Zeppelin. There's a lot of it. He played Billy Joel all the time, even. I remember like Uptown Girl was playing in the basement when we fixed it so often. But yeah, so there's a lot of stuff that goes back, but you could probably hear some Zeppelin in there.
Yeah.
You can hear Zeppelin in everything, let's be fair.
Yeah, that's true. That is very true.
Zeppelin and the Beatles. So, well, Andrew, Nick, thank you so much for joining me. I just want to tell listeners one more time that you guys are going to be opening for Welshly Arms on Friday as part of a two-night residency that they're having at the Beachland Ballroom. Doors open at 7 p.m. Show starts at 8. Should be a good time. I'm not going to be there myself. I wish I could be. I'm sorry. I'll have to catch you guys on the flip side. But as we're playing ourselves out, as the show is ending, which of your cuts should we play ourselves out with?
Supermoon.
Supermoon. We're gonna play that one.
Wasn't there some supermoon eclipse recently?
There was. It was
super
obscured by clouds because
I could barely
Cleveland.
See it.
Right, exactly. So,
because Cleveland. Here's your supermoon if you missed it.
Hashtag this is Cleveland. Yeah. Well, guys, thanks so much for joining me. It's been a real pleasure. And as always, listeners, be sure to stay tuned. I'm subbing that 70s show coming up next. So you're going to hear an hour of all Cleveland rock coming your way. The Commonwealth may or may not be included in that. You'll have to stick around and find out. But as always, thanks so much for listening. Thanks for choosing WRUW this evening. And here's wishing you and yours the very best.
You're listening to WRUW FM 91.1, Cleveland. Coming up next, That 70 Show. I'm Hot Donna. Stay tuned.